All right, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, working diligently, as he always is, at Scoreboard Central and really our central headquarters, getting ready for yet more reports. We got a lot of stuff up on the website right now, glad you are with us. Of course, football season is underway. I do have, before we bring in Tim here, I've got a lot of local field hockey scores to run down very quickly for you. We'll have the Masconomet football coach, Gavin Monagle, on in a little while, along with Steve Krause. But in field hockey today, Bishop Fenwick and Manchester Essex tied at 1. Amesbury and Hamilton Wenham tied at 1. St. Mary's and Weston tied at 1-1. Ipswich 4, Rockport 1, Newburyport shut out Triton 5-0, Pentucket and North Reading tied at 3, and Essex Tech beat Linfield by a score of 2-1. Also, it was Malden 6 and Revere 1. And in boys soccer, Masconomet 4, Saugus 2, Gloucester beat Danvers 3-2, and Malden Catholic shutting out Bishop Fenwick 3-0. And of course, with football season now getting underway in high school as well as college and the pros, a couple of really interesting scores stood out this weekend. And Tim, I don't know if anything caught your eye, but we can talk about a couple of them if you'd like. How are you doing?
I'm good.
What's the first high school score you can think of? I'm pretty sure you followed, or at least, I know you were at the Beverly game, so there is that one, which I think is probably a bit of a disappointment for Coach Hutton. And then also on the other side of the coin, Coach O'Connor up in Gloucester, great start for them.
Yeah, I think Saturday's Beverly game was a preview of what the Patriots did to the Patriot Nation last night. Had a horrible start, fell behind quickly, and then couldn't score enough in the second half to overcome the damage, though they had opportunity. They just couldn't finish off drives. Came up short, critical penalty, and for both teams, it spelled opening day defeat. You know, I know in talking to Coach Hutton afterwards, he was disappointed but enthused by the great effort that the kids gave, and they did. They didn't stop the whole game. It's just that Haverhill was that much bigger, faster, stronger than they were. They had an all-state caliber quarterback who stood 6'4", what about 230, had a great arm. He could just sling it, and he fitted in some really tight spaces. He had great command of the field. He could run as well. His backup had solid performance as the starter, Guerrero, was kind of nicked up. It was too bad. It was a beautiful day over in Beverly for a big opening day win. Again, they just got behind the eight ball and couldn't come behind, much as we saw last night with the Patriots.
Yeah, that was Haverhill 27 and Beverly 14. Other scores, Salem racked up 51 points over Arlington to Arlington's 26. And Peabody, great start for the Tanners, 35-0 over Revere. You don't see that happen very often, Tim.
Now, looking at some of the scores that have come in involving Revere, looks like it might be kind of a down year, at least at the start of the season, fall season, for a lot of the teams. They're taking some losses. They're taking some losses by pretty good amounts.
Well, you know, I've got an interesting stat, Coach, that absolutely messes with my head. If you look at the Northeastern Conference and I hate to use that phrase, in the Northeastern Conference in football, the Dunn Division, the upper level, the North, the bigger schools, Tim, every single school lost on Saturday. Marblehead, Swampscott, Masconomet, Beverly, Danvers, they all lost. And in the Lynch Division, it was the opposite. Every school won. Peabody, Salem, Winthrop, Gloucester, and Saugus. I don't know if it means anything after the first game, but I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, I'm not sure it means a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. You're still working out some wrinkles. A lot of teams have a lot of new personnel in place. Like teams like Beverly, he's got a very young team. He's got returners, but again, he's had some people nicked up. Didn't get a whole lot of practice time in, and I'm sure that's the same way it was across the board. And, you know, you're playing some out-of-conference teams, and some of these teams are really, really good. Danvers took on Tewksbury. Swanska played Auburn. There's a way to go for a game. Salem played Arlington. I don't know how strong Arlington has been over the last few years. You know, but and Fenwick's no slouch for Marblehead. I don't know how many people saw that as a tremendous upset the way that the Fenwick team has played over the last several years. But I think that's what you see. You're taking on some out-of-conference competition. You don't know all that much about them. And, again, Harrell came in. They got beat by Beverly last year. And again, these teams come in fired up. They get, you know, a year's experience underneath their belts. And they're looking for payback. And a bunch of them got it.
Well, yeah, big win by Fenwick over Marblehead. And then in the Cape Ann League, Kinney Division, Newburyport and Pentucket were winners. And in the Baker Division, Amesbury and Linfield were the winners. Everybody else came up short in the Cape Ann League. So kind of an interesting start with that first week. And as all the coaches were and by the way, Bill Newell has great details on that Bishop Fenwick Marblehead game up on our website, as well as interviews with players and coaches after the game. But before the in our preseason interviews, the coaches were saying how this first game is just so it's just such a mystery. Other games that were important, of course, St. John's Prep beat Kipp Academy 22-20 in a close one. Classical over Central Rhode Island 28-26, double overtime. Lintec beat Malden 20-14. What else do we have here? Lynn English shut out by Lawrence 27-0. Saugus opening up with a big win over Chelsea 40-6. Winthrop 13, Stoneham 7. And Linfield winning big over Triton 41-7. Manchester Essex 40 over Ipswich 26. And as we will be talking with, I will be talking with Coach Dan Connors of Essex Tech tomorrow. Newburyport 39, Essex Tech 14. And how about that Gloucester win 42-8 over Somerville, Tim?
Well, I think Somerville has some real weaknesses within their program, but for you know, for Gloucester to come out and make that kind of a save and opening game, I think it's one that the team has been building towards the last couple of years. You know, Dan did a great job of getting the program back on track. He's a former player. He's a Gloucester graduate. He knows the town. He knows the kids. And one of the things I noticed this summer was that there was a new, like a rededication to effort with the summer training program down the beach. There was a large number of kids involved, and we both know, Rick, back in the heyday, when the Gloucester teams were steamrolling everybody, it was because they had the stamina at the end of the game that the other team just didn't have, and they kept that stamina all year long because they had spent every morning of the summer down on the beach running in the sand and building up that stamina, and it paid dividends in that first game. They come out and they were strong and they stayed strong.
Well, that's a good sign for the fishermen to get started. And we will be covering games this week as we usually do. This week's game, Beverly is at North Andover Friday night at 6. Fenwick at Arlington Catholic at 6. Salem hosts Danvers at 6:30. Essex Tech hosting Amesbury at 6:30. Manchester Essex travels to Rockland 6:30. Peabody hosts Lynn Classical at 7, Ipswich at Triton 7, and Gloucester will be hosting Weston at 7. Those are the Friday night games, and we have three on Thursday night. Hamilton Wenham at Greater Lawrence, King Philip at Marblehead, Lynn English at Swampscott. And we'll be covering as many of those games in one way or another as we can. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Masquinaman High School football coach Gavin Monagle in just a second. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns. Bill Newell, of course, on board, as he usually is, working silently. And later on, Steve Krause will check in. Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. So we will be back. This is North Shore Sports Night, so please to stay with us.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Yeah, hello, Coach. We're back. When they don't answer, I have to hang up and have to reconnect. This thing won't do it otherwise. So there we are. We're trying to see if we can get a hold of Gavin Monagle, the Masconomet High School football coach. I think they have a week off. We're talking also tomorrow with the Essex Tech football coach, Dan Connors. They had a tough introduction to the Cape Ann League. And by the way, Masco faced a Bill Rickett team. Of course, I think most people are familiar with Dwayne Sigsbury in a 10th season at Bill Ricka, that went 10-1 last year, and they got a whole bunch of guys back. And listen to some of these stats. They've got a 6'5" guard, a left tackle, a 6'3" line mate next to him, 6'3", 245. Another guy up front, 5'11", only 205. And another guy, 6'2", 265. On the other side at right tackle, you got a 6'3", 290 pounder and a 6'4", 235. I mean, these guys are huge. So for the Masco kids to face up to that, that could not have been easy. So anyway, Tim.
It does, you know, and those Merrimack Valley teams, they come big.
My goodness.
And they come strong. And again, you count off a 10-win season, and the first thing you want to do is you want to get out of the gate and you want to hit the ground running and running hard. And with that kind of size in your line, you're going to have some major league holes to run through.
Coach Sigsbury said it's the best offensive line I've had in 14, the best line I've had in 14 years. So, Masco will bounce back. I have no doubt of experience. They're lacking some experience up front, so they got a lot of kids who have to learn, but they got a couple of really good players back, including NEC All-Star Jacob Miller. He's among the two-way starters for Masco. Chase Caron and Robbie Engel are back. They serve as captains for the Chieftains, and Coach Monagle has described this group as a super group of kids with a great work ethic. So you know that they are going to be rebounding after that game against Bill Ricka. Tim, I'm with you, and I'm sure Steve is probably going to say something similar. If we could have just erased that first quarter yesterday with the Patriots, that was a really entertaining game. They came up just short. I thought for sure they were going to win it. I really did. But it was entertaining at the bare minimum.
Oh, when they got that ball back in the last couple of minutes, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. You know, they're going to have a Brady-esque ending. They're going to get down the field, at least kick a tying field goal, and push it to overtime. And you know, it wasn't to be. But you know, after those early turnovers and the 16-0 deficit. They started playing better. Mac started, you know, finding a groove. He got into a nice rhythm. The receivers found open spots. They were holding onto the ball. And, it just looked like a totally different team in the first couple of times that they had the ball, and they just kept that up throughout the whole game. It would have been nice if they had been able to go down and score with their opening possession in the second half. That would have been really, really big. But, again, they didn't do it, but it didn't slow them down. They didn't get out of their rhythm because of it.
A couple of things I think stood out. The good play of so many different guys was good. The rookies did well, of course. Who was it? I forget who got the last pass, and he couldn't get the foot down at the end there. That was a deal breaker. And then the other one was when Jones underthrew his receiver, because that would have been a sure six. He underthrew it and was almost an interception. And I don't know if it's lack of arm strength or he just, you know, misplayed it.
There were so many close plays that, you know, they just been able to hang on to the ball or, you know, make a bit better effort to make a reception, or Mac had just put it down a little lower. But the weather was tough. The grip had to be tough for him there. But it was tough for both sides. And, Philadelphia's a very good team, you know, all the way across the board, offensively, defensively, special teams. Their core players are really good. So, you know, you tip your hat to them. The Pats were in the game. You just wish that they didn't have that kind of disastrous start with the pick six and then the fumble by Elliott, you know, that they turned into a 30-yard touchdown. You look back and, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, but that doesn't win you anything. You got to go out and make the plays.
Yeah, and it was, in the end, it was just extremely, extremely disappointing. Anything else catch your eye in the NFL? I'm curious about tonight's game. I do want to watch a little bit of it, but anything else catch your eye over the weekend with football?
Well, you know, it was funny. I turned out the game last night between Dallas and the Giants. It started out pretty much like the Patriots game. The Giants went down 16-0 really quick. And I'm thinking, oh, it'll be interesting. Can they come back like the Patriots did? And the answer was it decided no.
Yeah.
Which are really good because, you know, whatever bad happens to the Giants, I kind of relish in. So I look back later and they're down by 30 and I'm going, oh, this is really good.
Oh my. Yeah, I don't have the scoreboard up there, and I really wasn't watching any of the other games. So I really don't know anything about the other games. It was just kind of disappointing for me for the Patriots. I do know that they're, Cleveland beat Cincinnati yesterday, yes?
Yeah, that game was pretty close all the way through. And all of a sudden I turned it on later and Cleveland had pulled it up. I was like, oh boy.
All right, hold on, Tim. I'm going to try to bring in Gavin. Hold on, please. Hello, Rick Moore.
Hi, Rick. This is Gavin.
Hey, Gavin. Sorry about that, man. I'm sorry about that email. That was supposed to go to Colin McQueen.
Oh, which one? Oh, for tonight?
Yeah. Hold on. No.
I forgot I missed it.
No. Right. Hold on 1 second. Let me just get this off here.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now after user error on my part. We have Coach Gavin Monagle now of Masconomet High School, along with Tim Kearns, of course. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO. Tim and I were just talking about the monstrous size of the Bill Ricka line that you guys had to face this weekend. So give me a little of idea of what your kids were up against.
Oh, there were some good-sized kids, and they were pretty athletic, too. They're physically tough. Good football players, really good skill, linemen and backs, receivers. They were a tough team, good football team. It was a tough opener, but I thought our kids, I was happy with our kids' effort, to tell you the truth. We just don't have enough time to get ready for everything that such a good team, you know, presents. You see some things on tape afterwards. We just didn't get to everything. We would have had to play a really close to perfect game to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, down early, you know, and the kids bounced back. We got a couple touchdowns. So it was 19-14 at halftime.
Ooh.
And then they were able to get, they got the ball, and they got a nice, good old school long drive, you know, 3 yards here, 5 yards there. They took up a good chunk of the period. And we got the ball back, didn't have as long of a drive, and then they got the ball back again. They just got another two big ruling drives in the second half to kind of put it away for them. But mm-hmm. I was happy with the kids' effort. I mean, I think a lot of kids who hadn't been ever on the varsity field before to step up against these guys, I thought we did all right.
Excellent. Tim?
Because one of the things about playing against a physically larger team is, again, in the second half, your kids have to begin to get tired because of the similar to the other team just simply leaning on them and pushing them backwards, and that resistance of that forward impetus against you really ties the back leg, backside down. Your legs start to go a little bit. So by the end of the third quarter, you know, you're really starting to feeling the gas, and the other team with that overwhelming size and strength can really just sort of put it away easily in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, they're a smart team too. You know, they I thought called a good game over there, and you know it's some basic good old football where you know they go hard. There's some read plays in there. They throw it a little bit, keep you honest. But they did wear us down a bit. You know, I thought our kids were in great shape, but still the wear and tear. Again, some younger kids just. It's overwhelming, just your anxiety of playing that first game. That can catch you. You got to catch your breath from that a little bit. And, the wear and tear, that's a factor. It's no question about that. That's accurate. But, we have to learn from it, you know, just get a little bit better going forward. And we won't see a team that big, though. That's the good news.
Oh, yeah.
Unless we play them again, that's the way.
There you go.
We got to get better, and hopefully, we get another chance at these guys in the playoffs.
I like the way you said that. Unless we play them again, I love that. Gavin, when you look at the film now, I mean, it's a different story looking at the film than when you're down at field level. Can you pick out a kid or two on your side who did? You know, you're really proud of the work that took place, and maybe the accomplishments that he did on the field.
A lot of kids are real proud of it. I know, like, Lucas Magnifico and Jack Fabiano, they kind of jumped out defensively because they're a couple sophomores. They each had 17 tackles, though.
Oh.
And they were pretty busy. Busy linebackers. Jack caused a fumble one time, too. Nice hit. It kind of got us the ball back somewhere in the second half, I think that was. And it kind of stopped one of their drives. So, you know, there were a lot of kids, but those two jump out, you know, just with the numbers, I think, out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie Engel's been a great leader for us, a captain. He's been super. He scored one of our touchdowns there, big touchdown, second touchdown, just to try to keep pace with them. He made some nice plays on the defense as well. He's one of my captains. And Jacob Miller, I thought, did a super job on both sides of the ball, offensive guard and defensive end. Chase Karen, you know, both ways, too. I mean, Chase, you know, had a no-glory position. He was the center going against the big dudes on one side, and he was the defensive tackle on the other side. You know, like, again, not a glorious position to be in, but, you know, just fought tooth and nail, you know, all the way through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what we're proud of, kids that can do that, and, you know, great leaders like that. So,
familiar names, except for the sophomores, so that's pretty cool. Tim, another question for Coach Monagle?
Coach, one of the things that Coach Paul Ingram did when he knew he was going to be facing a team, and it was all part of his, the offensive, the wing tee setup, was... so you're very familiar with it, is that he coached the kid to attack the opposing lineman at an angle and take him from the side thigh high, between the knee and the thigh, and get him to turn the hips.
Yeah.
Because he thought his running backs needed at the time, and of course the backs that he had at that time were legendary in terms of Gloucester history. All they needed was a small gap to get through. And I just remember that the kids on his offensive line, he loved having I'm trying to think of the right guy, what his designation was in the wing T. But I had, like, for 3 years in a row, I had the best students in a row, like 5'10", 170. And Paul loved them that size because they were small, they could get low, and they were smart enough that they knew the offense, and they could get into that guy's hips and just turn them enough to give the running backs a key. Do you make that kind of adjustment during the course of a game today?
Yeah, I mean, that's all good advice from Coach Ingram. He's the best at it, and I would agree with that. I think it kind of goes back to one of the things I said earlier, though, too, is, like, getting ready, like, the 3 weeks of preseason. You turn over in high school, everyone's turning over, new kids are coming in and stuff, and the kids have run into the system a bit, but to play at the varsity level, that's one thing that jumped out at our video, I think, too, just the pad level, consistently being down where it needs to be and getting the angles. Yeah, that's absolutely vital to the wing T world. And the timing of the backs and stuff, like, I think this time of the year, I do think a lot of wing T teams do fight that this time of year, and we'll get better. The timing thing, you just need it to work and work and work, and, the linemen with the backs, and the timing's crucial, because if you do it right, you just need that crack and to have that confidence. Sometimes we saw, our back over running our blocker in front of him once or twice. It was just a timing thing. The motion was off, just the hair. Just the things like that. You do see it during the game. You try to talk them up during the game, coach them up during the game, but it's tough. They saw it on film. I think it looked a lot. I think it came more alive to them when they saw it. But those are all really good points with the wing T, though. We will get better at it. Coach Ellis, our offensive line guy, we just got new shoots, blocking shoots that keeps the kids low, a little like a netting thing. It just came in today. We got him up there, so he was the happiest guy in America today. He had his line going nice and low, and just what you're saying, because they have to be thigh high, and that's a good angle.
Coach, the other thing is, you mentioned your two sophomores. Is it kind of unusual for kids that age to come in and be up to the speed of the game in a varsity game? Because, we've seen so many times when new kids come in, the first half especially of the first game, they're just shocked by the speed of the game and the quickness of the game. They recover quickly. But is that one of the things that these sophomores were able to adjust to quickly?
Yeah, they did. They had good natural instincts, which is step one. They're both tough, smart kids. They did have a good understanding, and they were willing. There were a couple of times we saw on tape, we did say to one or two of them about what you're saying, the angle was good until it wasn't, because, it's like you knock on the catch. You caught a JV kid last year, but, give a ground a little, things like that. Mm-hmm. And they just nodded because you have the angle. All of a sudden, you got to kind of think that out a little bit before you've tried to finish someone off. So, but they were good. They're very quick learners. And, now the beauty is not with video. It's like you experience it live, the speed. Now you actually see yourself at that speed. Mm-hmm. And, I think we'll see some, as good as they play, I think we'll see some more jumps, positive jumps by everyone.
What's the message this week, Gavin, and what's the next game?
Well, we're off this week. We have a bye. Mm-hmm. Or, kind of an odd scheduling with Grafton from a year ago. We lost them. And so we have a bye. At first, I wasn't real happy about the bye. I was kind of like, I wasn't happy at all with the scheduling that happened. And but now, it might work out to our benefit just because, we just gather ourselves after such an intense game. It was, the kids really, it was intense. They did go at it the whole way. Leading up to it, we had great practices, and it was a lot of intensity going into that game. I think we all need to take a breath. We had a good practice today, just kind of in shells today a little bit. And I think we can go at our pace and kind of relearn things. And, we couldn't get everything in. Going back to that, just 3 weeks, and we really couldn't. There's lots of stuff you can do with this offense. But now I think we can, kind of take a breath, put a few things in today, review some of the things that we didn't put – good time into, like, we exposed the kids to a few things, but really didn't drill them yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of getting some time doing that. So we're going today and tomorrow, offense, 2 days in a row. We don't ever get time to do that, you know. So that's a beautiful thing. And then we'll go 2 days of defense. So, I mean, we'll get some time, I think, to utilize it. So we're using it for that. And we got Winchester coming up. Winchester just had a big win. They won like 31-0, I think, over Newton South.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big win for Winchester. I do know that. And might try to get to their game this week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just try to get ready for them. Start watching a little tape of our game with them last year. And just to try to see what worked, what didn't work. What, you know, they have a pretty they do a lot with their offense. They, Coach Dombrowski does a lot over there.
Coach, yeah. We're familiar with that for sure. Hey, Tim, final question for Coach Monagle.
Kevin, I definitely agree with you that having this week as a bye could have a lot of potential benefits for the team. It was a hard fought, like you said. It'll give an extra week to physically recover, and for the coaching staff, that extra week to reflect on, you know, what was good, what was not so good, what we can do better, what we can install, and have enough time to really have the kids grasp it and effectively pull it off.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. It's been a blessing now. Again, going back to the timing thing of everything, and it just needs time. We'll be better at it. You know, I got a lot of faith in these kids. They're a good group, and you know, it's. He's trying to block those kids, even with the angle sometimes, blocking those kids. Those dudes didn't move sometimes. Sometimes we had the angles, we came down high, we did everything right, and they weren't moving. So it happens sometimes, too, and you just figure stuff out.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Gavin, great talking with you. I appreciate it. I love the upbeat and the places where you guys will be headed. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Well, I appreciate it, both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank,
have a good one.
Thank you, Coach. Take care. All right.
Bye, guys.
That is Gavin Monagle, who is the Masconomet High School football coach, forever optimistic, forever enthusiastic, and made a lot of good points, Tim. That was not an easy game.
No, and you know, they're very realistic about, you know, the effort that the kids put in and what they can get out of it. And, you know, there are teams that are just physically bigger and better than you are, and you've got to go out there, you've got to hold your own, and you've got to give it your best shot. And there are times when you walk out of there with a W, and other times you take the L. And there's no shame in a good effort.
Right. Absolutely.
So there's only shame as if you didn't try at all.
Okay. Let's take a break, see if we can check in with Steve Krause here, see if I can get my act together this time with the controls. This is North Shore Sports Night at MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And, well, let's see what happens this time. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, for the first time tonight, I did the right stuff. Steve Krause is with us. He is both a sports and news journalist, very familiar, of course, figure at the Daily Item of Lynn for a while. And Steve, I'm going to let you and Tim just bat it around here for a while, and it's sort of an open forum. Tim and I we've touched a little bit on the Patriots. Well, we touched a little bit more than a little, but we have not discussed the Red Sox or anything else. So where would you like to start?
I would like to start by saying that Timmy and I are both, I think, 70. We just hit it this year. And I have been around for 70 years, and I have never, ever, ever, ever in my life seen, even when both teams were horrible, I've never seen the idea of having a four-game series in September with the Yankees and having nobody talk about it. That is absolutely insane to me. I mean, I understand that teams are terrible and, you know, it's very easy to get down on the Red Sox now because of the way the team's policy seems to be with regards to spending money on talents and stuff like that. And the Yankees are a mess. But, you know, it's still Boston, New York, the Yankees, you know, that there isn't any football game till next Sunday. You know, it amazes me for somebody who grew up with the Patriots being like the ugly stepchildren of Boston sports. Now, all of a sudden, they're the Boston sports team, and you can't hear enough about them. I mean, good for them, but I just think that I'm amazed that there's not any buzz about a Red Sox and Yankee series in September.
Like you said to me, they both suck this year, so it's like, you know, it's not like one is chasing the other. One's trying to keep the other from finishing in first place or, denying them a playoff spot. It's like, nothing to play for, so let's just get it over and done with, you know? And it's like,
Yeah, but don't you appreciate the ultimate irony of two teams that have been so much a part of the baseball landscape the last 20, 25 years actually battling to see who finishes in last place?
I think that's some of it, you know, as maudlin a thought as that is for a lot of Red Sox fans and those that, you know, are just tired, sick and tired of the Red Sox and the management, that they're like, yeah, this is what they deserve, you know. And the Yankees, you really want the Yankees to finish in last place. And if you finish, place in front of them, well, you've had a good season. As long as you beat the Yankees. It's been such a wacky season for both teams. You know, the inconsistent play, the inconsistent pitching, the horrible defense, the absolutely asinine maneuvers by management, the lack of action by the management. You're getting what you deserve, and if it's the last two places, you know, fight it out. But I don't watch them. I'll be honest, I don't watch them.
I don't watch them, of course. Like everybody else, I watch the Patriots, but.
Yeah.
I had to start with that. I don't want to talk about it forever, but I just had to start with that I just think that it is amazing to me. I never thought I'd see it happen. I always figured that no matter what else was going on in sports, once the Red Sox and Yankees met, that would be it. That would be the story of the week that would hold everybody's interest for the entire 4 days that they're in, but doesn't seem that way.
I'm just so tired of the way baseball is played nowadays. I just can't get into it. It's like the guys don't know how to play the game. That they're trying to get by on athleticism at all, and they don't know the game. They don't know the fundamentals of the game. They don't execute the fundamentals of the game. And as old-timers as we are now, you know, we grew up in an era when there was good baseball, and even when the Sox, you know, weren't all that good, they played some pretty good baseball now and again. The 70s got very interesting, you know, and then the 80s left a little bit, but then they came back, you know. But the overall play of the game was just better. You didn't have better athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying.
But you had baseball players.
Hmm?
You know, you didn't have better athletes, but but you had better baseball players.
I distinctly remember a play about two or three weeks ago. It might have been a Red Sox game. It might have been another game I was watching. But the ball was hit to first base. I mean, the first baseman was maybe a foot and a half off the bag. Lefty hitter, runner on first. Ball is hit to first base. First baseman picks up the ball, throws to second to get the force play, and then the second baseman, or the shortstop, rather, throws the ball back to first, and the batter, runner, beats it out. And I'm saying to myself, you know, that's one of those plays where you tag the bag, and then you throw to second, and tag the runner. You know, that's an easier double play than doing it the other way around. But the guy on the first baseman didn't have the presence of mind to do that.
No, they don't. You know, it's because, as Freddie Gill taught us at the clinic on Sunday morning, what am I going to do if the ball is hit to me? What am I going to do if the ball is hit to anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have all those configurations in your mind before the ball is pitched. And when the ball is pitched and the ball is hit, you simply react. These guys can't react anymore. They have to sit there and think about what they're going to do.
Well, Steve, let me ask you. Let me interrupt for a sec, Tim, and then ask you, too, because Casas is not a gem in the field. But what do you, who are some of the bright lights that you got to see, Steve? I mean, a couple of these kids look good, and I'm so impressed with Casas at the plate. He's such an absolutely different player this year from last year when he came up in September.
Well, I think the problem the Red Sox have now is that they have designated hitters all over the field.
Yes.
You know, I think Devers is a designated hitter. I think Casas is a designated hitter.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think that at some point, Casas is going to have some lessons on how to play first base, because I think Devers is your DH for the future if they can find a third baseman. As far as fielders go, nobody. I just think that they don't have a defensive team unless one of these kids that they're starting to bring up and play does something exceptional. It doesn't take long to find that out either. Look at this kid from Cincinnati that's the shortstop. Got an absolute cannon for an arm. You know, I think Verdugo, when he wants to play, can play. Problem with Verdugo was that he doesn't always want to play, or so it would seem. But all over the diamond, they're sadly lacking in the field. I think that, whatever his name is, you know, the Japanese guy in left field, he's not going to make anybody forget about Kyle Yastrzemski. I think Story's a decent shortstop, but he can't hit. So, you know, they just don't have that one player who can do it all, and that's one of the reasons why they are where they are. You know, they always at least had one player on that team that could do it all. And that player was the leader. Now they don't have that.
Mm. Yeah, the thing with Story, they brought him in to play second base.
Yeah. He's an actual shortstop, though.
Yeah, but when he came here, he was a second baseman.
Yeah, because Bogaerts was the shortstop, but didn't they also kind of bring him in as insurance?
Why is the Red Sox problem? I don't think he has the size to play shortstop, to give him the range to be an effective shortstop. He handles the ball well, but he doesn't have the range. You know, I just see him as he's the perfect size for your second baseman, you know, and get him in there and let him get comfortable. I mean, that's where he came from. That's what he was doing. You know, and both, you know, like you said, you know, we need a shortstop there who's got range and a big arm that can go back into the hole and come up firing, and you know you're going to have a chance of getting out after.
Guys, we're not going to fix the Red Sox. We're not going to fix them. I want to ask both of you, as longtime observers of sports at every single level, and of course we love our home teams. As obviously we love the Red Sox and the Patriots no matter what. Who is a favorite opponent, a favorite other team, professional or otherwise? I know, Steve, you go big time into the beanpot. So who is a favorite team, and Tim also chip in on this, that you really, over the years, let's just say is a favorite to watch, that you love to watch, and has sort of been historically consistent, if there is such a thing. Steve?
Boston College hockey, to me, has always been my standard when it came to Boston collegiate sports. And now I'm not saying that that's any great thing to write home about, because there's an awful lot about Boston collegiate sports that doesn't seem to exist outside of Boston. But, you know, one of the things that we do have is hockey, and I love watching BC hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that Jerry York did a fantastic job. He's gone now. He retired, but there were a lot worse people in life to root for than Jerry York.
Mm-hmm.
As a coach, he was just a wonderful guy. I like my alma mater, the Huskies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that they've taken that program so far, both men and women, that, you know, your hat has to go off to them. They were like everybody's laughing stock when I was in college. And the third one for me, it's not a hockey team. It's actually a pro team. And that is, I have always appreciated, believe it or not, I've always appreciated the Minnesota Twins. Because no matter what kind of talent they have, that organization has always produced players who have played the game the right way. You know, when they were winning, they had some great players on that team, Kirby Puckett. I mean, these guys knew how to play, and they played right. They had good management. Now they got a kid from Lynn, who's actually their general manager, Derek Talvey. So that should be. I love the Twins.
Mm-hmm.
If the Red Sox can't win, I wish the Twins would.
Tim?
Timothy? You're right.
Yeah, I love the Baltimore Orioles. They're my mm-hmm. second favorite. You know, I remember when they were in the World Series against the Dodgers. I raced home from school so I could turn the TV on for the 4 o'clock hour time game to watch Jim Palmer pitch against Sandy Koufax.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, and I loved Frank Robinson, by the
always,
way.
There was mm-hmm. just a thing. They reminded me of the Red Sox in a sense that they were always a blue collar team, and they were good, and they were just so classy about the way that they played, and they had such good players. You know, you had Brooks Robinson at third. You know, you had Booger for his base. You had Belanger, the kid from Pittsfield, at shortstop. You had the starting four that was, you know, legendary in baseball. I think they're the only team that had 420 game winners.
Yep.
You know, that back in, I think it was 68.
I don't know, it might have been later than that, but Cuellar, Palmer, Dobson, and
McNally,
right, yeah.
And I mean, you know, they oozed confidence in a way that wasn't cocky. They just went out there and they played sound fundamental baseball and beat your brains in.
Yep, that they did.
Well, I like, it's funny, two teams I've always liked are the New York Yankees. Oddly
Rick!
Enough, love them. I mean, I love to hate them, but I love to watch.
We can do it together.
I love to hate them, but I love to watch them play over the years. And you know, like Posada, especially, Jorge Posada, and, you know, The reliever, now I've lost his name again, but just a class.
Rivera?
Yes, of course, Mariano Rivera. And, of course, I go back to the days of Mantle and Maris, and as a kid, oh, my goodness, watching that team, and Bobby Richardson and Muscarin, all those guys, you know, and Yogi Berra in left field. I mean, come on, they were fantastic. And the other team I used to love to watch, and I still have respect for them, but it's the Philadelphia Flyers. When they were the Broad Street Bullies, good Lord, God, were they good. And they were fun to watch. Talk about playing the game right. And then the third one, and it's sad they've been such a demise over the years, is Montreal Canadiens. I mean, they were the absolute extreme great hockey team. And the Bruins could, you remember that, the Bruins could never, ever beat them.
You're killing me, Rick.
Well, I said, if the teams that you don't love, we all support the Boston teams, but give me a team outside that generally beats up on us that you like. And you can't beat it's the Yankees, and the other one is the Steelers. The Steelers.
Eesh.
Yeah, I agree with Steve with his choice of the Minnesota Twins, but back in the 60s when they had
Killebrew. Allison.
Alifa. Oh my God. They were just so good. They could pound you to death.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could nickel and dime you to death.
They've always been, Killebrew was, you talk about somebody over the years that struck fear into my heart whenever he came up to the plate. I wanted to hide when he came up to the plate. You know, I think that, sports, you know, it's one of those things where I am a big Derek Jeter fan. And I've become a bigger Derek Jeter fan since he retired, because I could look back on it as to what a classy player he was. I know people didn't like him because, you know, he was pretty and everything like that. But the guy played the game, and he played it well, and he played it right, you know? So in a way, I understand what you're saying.
Comment, he was, he was a pretty boy, but he never played that up himself. As opposed to A-Rod, who was all Mr. Pretty Boy.
Oh, A-Rod's always been a poser.
Yeah.
There's no comparison between
the two. Yeah, agreed. Not an A-Rod fan. Not ever, ever, ever. Not even in the booth. Nope. Mm-mm.
He's a poser. He just, you know, he tries to do what everybody else does and thinks that nobody's noticing.
I wasn't a Reggie Jackson fan, but you can't deny what he did when he was with the Yankees or even when he was out in Oakland.
Kind of liked Reggie myself. I like that kind of bravado. You know, it ain't bragging if you can do it type of thing. You know, that never bothered me.
Well, that's my man, Eckersley. I put him in that category.
Yep. It ain't bragging if you can do it.
Right.
I never minded that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, Ray Lewis, you know, pounding his chest when he comes out on to the field. I mean, I know the guy's probably 50-50 that he's a murderer, but, you know, he was entertaining.
But, Tim, what did Jimmy Brown used to say when he got into the end zone?
All of that showmanship. You know, play the game like you've been there before.
Tim, what did Jimmy Brown used to say when he get into the end zone?
Act like you've been there before.
Act like you've been there before.
And Emmett, Emmett Thomas would, run the length of the field, and what would he do? Didn't spike the ball. Handed it to the backfield judge. Thank you.
So did Barry Sanders. Remember Barry Sanders?
Yep.
He did that, too. He just ran in, handed the ball to the ref, and that was it, you know?
They drove him out of Detroit.
Didn't humiliate anybody.
Drove him out of Detroit too soon.
Yeah. Hey, what about them, huh? The Lions.
Isn't that something?
This could be the year of the Lions.
That's right. That's right. All right, guys. Let's see. Where are we? We'll have to do this again and come up with a topic. I'm going to let maybe Steve pick the next one. And of course, it's a lot of high school sports on our agenda as well. But it's always great bringing Steve in. And I have to encourage anybody who's got Facebook or social media, you gotta get a hold of Steve's musings, because I've said this before, and it's not to make anybody think anything about anything, except that stuff is really good food for thought, Steve. I love it. I love it probably more than I love reading Shaughnessy, and I love reading Shaughnessy. So keep doing it, my man.
Thank you, sir.
No, I love it. All right, and do you have a way people can access that besides social media?
I'm going to try to branch out and get it on a WordPress or a, mm-hmm. a Blogspot or something like that. I just have to play around with it a little bit.
Right.
You know, it's it's I have to find a vehicle in which to distribute it, because
excellent.
You know, right now the only reason why I'm on Facebook is to have an easy vehicle to distribute it.
Right,
but
right.
I am web. I'm unsavvy.
Well, it's good stuff, and it's not just sports either, Steve. It's all of your musings. People have got to get access to that. Tim, let's wrap it up with Steve. What do you want to say?
Oh, it's always great catching up with Steve, because being as old as I am, we've lived through the exact same thing, you know, and we suffered the same slings and arrows of outrageous fortune through all our Boston sports teams.
Yeah,
we know where each of us speaks.
Yep,
all right.
Sure. All right, Steve.
My parting word is not sports. My parting word is that I think that I spent a lot of today contemplating the tremendousness of the first responders in New York who came in and tried to rescue people from that horrific carnage in World Trade Center. You know, I know that there are an awful lot of them who are still alive, but their lives have never been the same, you know, for whatever reason, whether they had injuries that never healed, whether they had PTSD, other mental issues that came from seeing what they saw. You know, I know that, you know, we talk about the people who died. I've thought a lot today about the people who survived it, the people who lived, and who now have to live with what they saw. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye.
Well, that's well spoken, Stephen. Thank you for that. And that's one of the things I've been talking about that people have got to read, because that's very wise, and I think we all feel that way. And I cannot imagine what some of those families are still going through in every aspect. You're right. Steve, you want to say goodnight to, Tim, you want to say goodnight to Steve?
Goodnight, Tim.
Goodnight, Steve. And goodnight,
goodnight for NBC News.
All right. Goodnight, Steve. Thank you for all of that. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Take care. All right. That is sports and news journalist and just a great op-ed writer, opinion writer, Steve Krause. And Tim, we got to get him. You know what? If he gets something going here, we'll have to promote that. I wish he would publish with us. But his stuff is so insightful, as you just heard.
Yeah, and he's been that way for a long time. His journalism experience has taken him across the spectrum of topics, and so he knows from whence he writes.
He also looks at it from different angles, if not all angles, and not all of us do that. You know, we have our own little lens that we look through, but Steve tends to look at it from above, and I really enjoy that stuff. And you know, sports column writers and news column writers generally know what they're talking about. Sometimes they don't, but Steve does, and so I hope we can access that. Any final words of wisdom there, young man?
Wisdom, I'm not so sure.
Well, they say with age comes wisdom. How long do I have to live?
I don't know.
How long do I have to live to get wise? All right, Coach, it's been fun. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
I will talk to you next week, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Kearns. Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye.
All right, good night. That is Tim Kearns, who is our ambassador of goodwill and our super sports analyst here, and an all-around good guy. Thank you very much. Thank you for being with us. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Don't forget to check in on the website. Lots of good stuff up there. More interviews coming up this week. There's plenty of stuff up there at the moment. Let me just give you these scores once again that I have. In field hockey today, Bishop Fenwick and Manchester Essex tied at 1, as did Amesbury and Hamilton Wenham tying at 1. Also St. Mary's and Weston, they all tied at 1. Pentucket North Reading tied at 3. Newburyport shut out Triton 5-0. Ipswich over Rockport 4-1. Malden 6, Revere 1. That is field hockey. The only other scores I have are from boys soccer. Masconomet 4, Saugus 2. Gloucester squeezed by Danvers 3-2. And it was Malden Catholic 3, Bishop Fenwick 0. So that takes care of that stuff. Thank you for being with us. I appreciate it. Be well, be safe, and do the right thing. On behalf of Tim Kearns and Bill Proposky and Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. This is msonewsports@gmail.com. No, it isn't. It's msonewsports.com. If you want to email us, it's msonewsports@gmail.com. Good night.